Just signing in. Oh, I gotta get my water.
Oh, you got it?
No, I gotta get my water. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just gonna keep it down here. Hey guys, my name is Scott, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. Hey. Okay. So I actually thanking the committee back there for putting on an incredible event today. I mean, you guys just. I was just talking to the lady I was sitting next to, and it's like I just had like these waves of self-doubt just come. I'm the keynote speaker, and there's a word, and I get an extra 15 minutes, and like, oh my God, like these speakers today were just, one was like more incredible than the next, and sorry for the first one, just kidding. You know what I mean by that. This is recorded, I'm gonna be in so much trouble. No, but it was just everybody had something good to say today, and it's like, I've been around a long time, and I kind of, you know, I could be called a meeting snob, you know, I could be called this, I could be called that, and it's sort of like, you know, I want to hear what I want to hear. I want to hear Big Book Recovery, I want to hear Steps, and I heard every single thing I needed to hear and I wanted to hear, which is not always the case. So, you know, let me just start off how I usually start off. Let's start off with the third step prayer, because it'll help me, and then I know you guys want to help me, so, because I want to help you, and I want to bring God into this. And you know, if you don't have a God, and for me, God is, you know, just like the last speaker talked about, you know, three letters and one syllable. It's something that's absolutely greater than me. So, you know, I want to say the third step prayer to bring God into the room. If you don't have a higher power right now, if you don't feel connected to your higher power, feel free to borrow mine, you know, or feel free to borrow each other's. You know, you can keep mine for a while, just, you know, because my God's big enough. And after almost 25 years in program, you know, it's greater than any other thing I can ever imagine. So let's say the third step prayer together. If you don't know it, it's on page 63 of the Big Book. If you don't know it, you'll learn it. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I may better do your will. Take away the difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Okay, so I start off with that a lot because what that tells me is that any gifts that I've been given, you know, the 4,644 days of abstinence that I have a day at a time today, the 275 pounds off my body, you know, just the things like that is not Scott done. Scott, you know, I did the actions, but I left the results up to my higher power. And, you know, my sponsors were just as ass-kicking as the previous speakers talked about today. And they basically said to me, you know, the one in particular who brought me through the steps when I was a 22, 23-year-old kid, basically said to me, like, if you don't do this step, do you want to be 500 pounds again? She would just say that to me, just straight out. And I have a sponsor today who has always been my mentor in program and then became a sponsor years ago when I came out of relapse. She said, you don't know what you don't know till you don't know that you don't know. But once you know, what are you going to do about it? And I'll repeat that because it's kind of goofy. But you don't know what you don't know till you don't know that you don't know. But once you know, what are you going to do about it? So I see smiles from some people who might know my sponsor. You know, today's Idea Day, and a lot of people talk about describing their abstinence. And, you know, Ross did a great job of you know, starting the day off and reading the definition of abstinence. And do you know, a couple of years ago, like maybe 5-6 years ago, abstinence was a tool. Can you imagine an Alcoholics Anonymous that sobriety is a tool? So, I mean, OA, I'm not a big fan of like what OA does and how they manage their, you know, the corporation that's Overeaters Anonymous and some of the literature and this and that. But that was the one thing that we got right, that took abstinence, made a definition for it, whether you're bulimic, whether you're anorexic, whether you're a compulsive overeater, whether you're all of the above, or whether you're not overeater and you're just an eater. You know, like Kentucky Fried Chicken became KFC. You know, compulsive overeater now became compulsive eater because we have a lot of people, especially in 2016, especially in New York City where I'm from, a lot of people, you know, come in and are just normal weight, but just it's all their whole issues up here that they're food, they're in the food 24/7. So You know, so to me, plan of eating is, it's an important tool, but it's one aspect of the program. And I was having lunch and with some folks upstairs, and you know, I got into a conversation, and I'm opinionated. I mean, we're all, anybody who's been here, you know, 25 years is opinionated. We all have our set routes. And one of the things that I like to say is that if the food is more than 5% of your program, then there might be something missing. And the best way to explain that is to take a piece of paper, and let's say this whole piece of paper is me. This whole page. Well, really, this whole page is me, because I wrote a bunch of notes. And if I do this, this is my food. And then once I take care of the food, I have me to deal with. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? And then, because once I take care of the food, I have an allergy of the body. You know, somebody mentioned Laurie C. He's a great speaker. Lots of other people have done incredible jobs of describing the doctor's opinion, translated into our fellowship, and talking about alcoholic foods and things. That's my whole life. You know, I love that OA brought in food behaviors, because for me, I'm a compulsive overeater. I was 508 pounds as my top weight. You got to eat a lot of food to maintain a 500-pound body. But for me, it's more about food behaviors. I'll give you an example. Sorry if I'm mentioning food, but you know, I come from New York City, where you can't walk like 5 feet without something screaming at you, unless you walk down Park Avenue where there's no restaurants, but then some hot dog cart will just come and just ruin your whole day. So, you know, the thing is, capital Y, right? See, you know, you watch Sunday football, Thanksgiving, capital Y, okay? The capital Y, I like the capital Y, because let's say this part of the Y is Scottsville, and Scott's running the show, and this part of the Y is a disease. The disease is twice as heavy as Scott's will. And as much as Scott wants to stop, when Scott doesn't have a God in his life, the disease will win every single time, and twice on Sundays. And it's absolutely true. You know, it's important for me to figure out my alcoholic foods, my food behaviors. You know, I was a binge eater, obviously, and talked. I was also high sugar, high fat, high this, high that, high everything, salt, you name it. I would just disappear into food. And I can go out, and I can probably, you know, go into the train station on the way home. I'm going with somebody, but let's say I was going by myself, and I grabbed an Almond Joy bar. Gripped any candy bar for that matter, but Almond Joy happens to be a personal favorite, or was a personal favorite. And have that Almond Joy bar. I won't go home and then go into Manhattan or go into Queens where I live and just start going to every bodega in sight or every CVS and buying every single one and going crazy today. But what will happen is by Monday or Tuesday, I'll suddenly, you know, you love the word suddenly, you know, get some bright ideas. I'll suddenly get the thought, well, you know, it's breakfast time, and I don't like anything that's in the house, this and that, but you know what, an Almond Joy does have a nut in it, there's some protein there, you know, I mean, there's this, there's that, and do you know a Baby Ruth bar actually says 4 grams of protein right on the package? Who are they marketing that to? I mean, come on. In any case, I'll suddenly get the idea that, you know, an Almond Joy bar would be great to have for breakfast, but since it's just a candy bar, I would need 2, or a king size, you gotta love the king size, and or not. And then within a week or two, I'll be up to 20, 30, 40 candy bars a day. You know, and so that's sort of how my disease works. Overeating was definitely a major part of that equation. However, that wasn't the only piece of the equation. It was all about the games I would play, all about how food played, and if I got over, meaning this part of the thing thinks he won, when this part really won, and I got over, and nobody saw me, because so it doesn't count. You know, it's like people say Thanksgiving or amateur night or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I call I call Thanksgiving Thursday. You know, that's like, you know, what do you call Thanksgiving in OA? Thursday. I mean, it's some people have, you know, nice meals and family, God help us all, and they have, you know, lots of different rituals around it. But in the end, it's a day of gratitude. You know, and people like to eat and be festive and bring food, especially, I mean, I come from a Jewish household, there's lots of Italians, I'm one of our speakers today, and, you know, just lots of people just use food, and it was just my day to eat, to binge in front of everybody, as opposed to go and hide, because not a lot of people saw me really overeat, unless you were overeating with me. But even those people would be like, damn. Like, they would eat, you know, the 7 slices of pizza or whatever, and then they would see me with the 2 pies and be like, holy shit, Scott. You know, I mean, just, sorry for the language, but, you know, just stuff like that. So, you know, but Thursday is a day for giving thanks. You know what I'm doing Thursday? You know, I don't, my parents both passed away in the last bunch of years in abstinence. You know, the last 12 years and 8 months I've been abstinent. My father passed away. My mother passed away just 3 years ago. And I have a brother, and he always goes to a friend of his house. And I have another OAer. We're both comic book geeks. He's coming over. We're going to watch Jessica Jones on Netflix. You know, it's a 13 episode. We're going to binge watch that. I'm going to binge on Thursday. But it won't be on food. It'll be on TV show. And we're just going to have fun, because he's somebody I sponsor, but somebody I've also been close friends with for a lot of years in his program. And suddenly, you know, just recently asked me to work with him. So in any case, that's neither here nor there. Let's get into the meat and potatoes, pardon the expression, of this. So my disease, I started compulsively overeating at 8 years old. I only say 8 years old because I look at school pictures. And around 3rd grade, which is 8 for me, because I'm a March baby. So around 3rd grade, I started getting bigger, and then bigger, and then bigger, and then bigger. And I remember my first bite. It was an orange, something that I eat every day, you know, pretty much regularly. But at that point, it was an orange. I was a little kid. My mother must have yelled at me. Definitely, she would hit me all the time. Definitely got slapped, or definitely got hit, or yelled at. And I ran into the kitchen, opened the refrigerator, grabbed an orange, ran into my bedroom, ripped it apart as fast as possible, and shoved it into my mouth. At that point, little 8-year-old Scott, his pain went away. The pain of the slap, the embarrassment of being yelled at in front of the family, the embarrassment of everything. It just, everything went away. Something came over me. And it did for me what nothing ever did. And, you know, like any good addict, I chased that high all the way up to 500 pounds because, you know, no high is ever better than the first one. And even for an 8-year-old, nothing ever did what, you know what I mean? It just gets progressively worse. We have a progressive disease. So, let's see, so where do I start? So, yeah, so 8 years old, both of my parents are addicts. My mother is a compulsive overeater, gambler, pill popper. My dad had chronic pain. He was injured on the job, and he was on heavy narcotics. So, you know, I kind of grew up with that, and both of them were heavy smokers. And so I had that whole addict mentality growing up, and always had to fend for myself. You know, one therapist one time said, well, Scott, you were wearing adult clothing and wearing adult things as a teenager because you had to be an adult as a teenager because nobody was raising you. Whatever, that's psycho mumbo jumbo. We're here to talk about 12 steps and OA. But, you know, you get the point. So, you know, I look at it as like a mathematical chart where you have 0. I love analogies, so you can tell. And I'm also a storyteller, so you just got to bear with me a little bit. But you have like 0, negative 10, positive 10. So when I was 8 and I first compulsively overate, I was a normal kid, quote unquote, and I was living life on 0. And when I compulsively overate, it brought me up to positive 8. It was like, wow, this is great. By the time I was 21 and came into Overeaters Anonymous, or by the time I was 33 and came out of a horrible relalapse, I was living life on negative 9 and needed to eat just to bring myself up to 0, just to get out of bed and function. You know, Bill on page 8 of the Big Book talks about needing to hide a bottle of gin at the head of his bed, whether he dare hide a bottle of gin at the head of his bed. He would need it before getting out of bed. I get that, because I always had the Duncan Hines frosting under the bed, and I was just, I would wake up and the first thing I would do was reach down and just get that sugar rush. And so, you know, step one, powerlessness, unmanageability. The unmanageability part was kind of easy. I had a 300-pound barbell on my back, and walking around with a 300-pound barbell on my back was kind of rough. But, you know, the powerlessness that we're talking about is over the disease, whether over ourselves. And the Big Book and the doctor's opinion talks about the analogy of the body and an obsession of the mind. So the allergy we already discussed, the allergy is an abnormal reaction to something. I have an abnormal reaction to eating certain foods, doing certain food behaviors. When those are put into practice, I lose all control. everything goes out the window, God goes out the window. Nothing can stop me once I'm going. And once I'm going, none of you will ever want to know me. You know, you see me as a, you know, I'm not going to start giving superlatives about myself, but, you know, you laugh, you know, we party together, we have a good time, you know, we recover together, it's great. The Scott who's in his disease, totally different creature, totally different person. You will not want to be anywhere near me, have your family near me, even have your worst enemies near me. So, the obsession of the mind, however, remember the food, you know, the food versus this. Once the food is down, I have this left. This is the differentiator between us and the Weight Watchers and Jenny Craigs and this one and that one and the other one of the world. Because those other ones just deal with this. We deal with this. This is one aspect of it. This is why 5% of the time, if I'm just dealing, if I'm spending more than 5% of the time worrying about what I'm eating, what I'm not eating, how I'm eating it, when am I going to eat it, I'm in trouble. I need help. I need to be talking to my sponsor or lots of you. So the differentiator is the 11 other steps. So the key is the 11 other steps. So an obsession of the mind, an idea that rules out all other ideas to the contrary. That's an obsession. That's how it's defined. That's how I'm defining it today. It's an idea that rules out all other ideas to the contrary. And because when I'm getting that obsession and God's out of the picture and I'm in my head, God wins. I mean, the disease wins. When I bring God into the picture, the disease gets set aside. And the first speaker today talked about one of the things that she mentioned was the first thought. Right, was that you? It was the first thought. It was, you know, I have lots of things that I think about in a day, and for me, the first thought in food, you know, does pop in. I walk into a CVS, the first thing I do is this, because that's where the candy bars are, or sometimes this, depending on the CVS, Manhattan, everything is all over the place. And, you know, the first thought is not my fault. I'm programmed, I'm wired that way, I'm a compulsive overeater. Where the differentiator is, where the steps come in, where God comes in, is that I can take that first thought, realize that it's not that it's just a first thought, and go on with the rest of my day, and then the rest of the thoughts be of recovery. Because I'm not responsible for the first thought, but I am responsible for everything that follows that first thought. 100%. So again, how do I deal with this allergy of the body and this obsession of the mind, and what's the differentiator? Obviously, the differentiator is a power greater than myself. So the problem is the first step. The solution is the second step, okay? Came to believe that a power greater than myself restored me to sanity. I use lots of my's. You notice in the third step prayer, I said your power, your love, your way of life. I mentioned God in the you because I want to personally have a conversation with higher power. I'm not one into reading prayers. I like to personalize them and make them my own. That's just me. But the key for the second step, I had a lot of God baggage coming in here. You know, when I walked into program and I saw steps 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, and 11 all mention God, 6 of our 12 steps mention God. And it mentions, you know, higher power in step 2, God in step 3, God in step 5, God in step 6, Him in step 7, God in step 11, spiritual awakening in step 12. Those words scared me because I had a lot of God baggage coming in here. I'm not going to go through my whole history, but I was bullied in school, and I was sent to a religious school when I was 12, and the religious school didn't do much better for me. I found that in order to fit in, I faked being religious because I came from a non-religious home. So in order to do that, I got a lot of guilt, and I got a lot of shame about it, and I was busted many times. And I walked into program, I was living my life running from God, and I was living my life knowing that I was a sinner and I was going to hell, and because I knew I was sinning, it was going to be 10 times worse. So that was my mindset for God walking in here. And walking in here, I look at the second step, and I'm like, I was told that the second step is a solution. I'm like, oh boy. So I realized I had a really smart, I've had really smart sponsors. I've been very lucky. I've had smart sponsors, smart mentors, and all of them, big book. And I'm just so grateful for that. I mean, I still, you know, I respect all the other materials that are out there, but I think it's all, you know, basically parts of, that are taken from the big book and just sort of, it's interpretations of the big book. It's just the way I look at it. I look at it as, do I want to go to the faucet or do I want to go to the well? I'd rather go to the well and get the freshest water possible, right? So that's just me. So I was told I need to fire the God that I had and look for a new higher power. And in order to do that, I needed to make a help wanted ad. Help wanted ad, really. So I was told, we're going to talk about people under 25. A lot of the people today don't really know what the New York Times is. You guys are in New Jersey, but I know New York Times is, pretty strong out here. And the key is, remember those help wanted ads from the 80s and 70s and whenever? It was like these little tiny ads. I know in Manhattan they distribute AM, PM, like other newspapers like that. They have little tiny ads. Three, four lines, gets to the point as quickly as possible, gives you what to do. So I was told, Scott, you need to make a help wanted ad, and it needs to fit on the palm of your hand. I'll tell you why in a minute. It needs to fit on the palm of your hand. It needs to be three to four lines for the subject, and four to five words per line. Don't get all wordy, don't get all crazy, and just make a help wanted ad. So I'll read you the help wanted ad I first made, and that's just kind of the same higher power I have today, which is pretty miraculous the way that works. I put in search of ISO, HP, in search of higher power, okay? Loving, forgiving, all-encompassing, infinite to my finite, strong to my weak, always there no matter what, and in big bold letters, must start immediately. And I paid extra for the bold, and you had to pay extra for the bold back then. So, I asked, why does it have to fit into the palm of your hand? He says, Scott, because when you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you make a billion phone calls because you want to eat and you've been programmed to make phone calls no matter what, and you can't get anybody on the phone, that you can just close your hand and talk to God and bring God close to you. Wow. Okay. That's interesting. And then I was brought through, there is a solution, and then I was brought through more about alcoholism. And what I learned there was that I had to believe that I couldn't do this thing anymore. It uses the word control 5 times on page 30 in the first page of More About Alcoholism. It talks about the control that we all had or that we think we had, and now we have to smash this and that and get rid of control, and everybody wants to control this and control that. And I realized that that's part of what powerlessness is, that I need to give up that control. So part of the help wanted ad was to also start believing that I was a compulsive overeater, that I couldn't do this thing alone, and that I needed something stronger than me. And then the next thing I was brought into into We Agnostics, where it talks about belief versus faith. And I'll talk about that in a second, but two things happened. The second thing I'll talk about later on, but the first thing was that I was also asked to make a 30-second commercial. You ever hear of that? You salesmen out there know what a 30-second commercial is. Or an elevator speech, I'm sure you've heard of that. It's basically, you're a sales executive, you want to sell something to a business, and then you can't get the CEO on the phone, but you can get a middle manager to come in and you can pitch to them, and then they'll translate your ideas and then bring it upstairs to the boss, whereas you really want to talk to the boss because it saves a bunch of time and it's just easier. So you go into your appointment and you go into that middle manager, but in walks the CEO of the company into that elevator. And the CEO recognizes, your shirt or whatever, you have your company logo on somewhere, maybe a hat or something. And he says, oh, you're from so-and-so company. Tell me about your company. Well, you got 30 seconds in that elevator to pitch your company. So I was told I need to pitch my higher power to my sponsor and to every single person that moves. So my 30-second commercial kind of changed over the years because it got adjusted after my relapse, and I'll talk about that also. But the key to the 30-second commercial is that it's succinct, it's to the point, and it's something that's mine. And I'll tell you what it is. It's basically and I kind of heard it from different places. I'm also a stealer. I also hear ideas, and I just steal them and then make them my own. I add my own, little Scotty touch to it, and I make it my own. And then hopefully you guys will take whatever ideas I'm saying and then make it your own. I pray that you guys do that and help other people, because that's what we're here for. So, something makes the sun come out during the day and warm the earth, light the earth, nourish us, photosynthesis, all sorts of great stuff happens with the sun. And something also, that same something makes the moon shine at night. and control the tides of the ocean and light the earth and do all these miraculous things. And then something makes food grow right out of the ground. Well, that something is greater than me. And you can call it Mother Nature or Father Time or Father Nature or Mother Time. It's just greater than me. And then after my relapse and after I went to a whole bunch of more God work, I added to that. And that's something I've brought into my heart and brought really close to me where it sits on my shoulder. And it's always with me. So if I want to compulsively overeat, I have to ask God to leave the room. So I'm no longer alone. Even if I'm alone physically, and nobody's seeing me buying an almond joy, God knows. God's there. Because if I have God in the picture, I can't. It's just impossible. It's like the opposite ends of a magnet where you try to put them together and they just won't go together and it'll want to flip and then go the other way. And then you turn it back and you can't put it together. It's the same thing. It's the same concept. Another incredible thing that helped me get my faith back after a relapse, you know, and I went through the steps. And I went through the steps and I was Mr. OA for a while in my 20s. And I during that time, I did a lot of service and I did a lot of things. But I also discovered music. With the food down, I had lots of open space. So I had lots of availability for new things. I started working. I discovered the world of women. I discovered, you know, just a lot of different things. And I started making other things my higher power. And what I realized was that the thing I think about the most in each given day becomes my higher power. So I started making other things my higher power than my higher power. And that's when everything started going off the rails. I was acting out with women. I was drinking too much. I was eating too much. I started making excuses for my food. I started just doing this and doing that until I finally admitted that I was in relapse. And I just kind of went off the rails and floated around, you know, just 2 years, like a year here, 6 months there, 10 days here. Just, it was always something different, and I always had an excuse for everything. And then 9/11 hit, and that's when I completely went off the rails. And then, you know, again, we had a situation like Paris just a few weeks ago, or last week, I should say. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, if there's a God in the world, why would he do this, you know? And just things along those lines. And I completely went off the rails, and I went straight up, and I went to my highest weight ever at 508 pounds. And then someone told me the dog God story. And I was like, what's that? And it's like, well, I mean, there's two different dog gods. You hear lots of, you know, dog spelled, God spelled backwards as dog. The first one that you always hear is, you know, if I say, name a breed. You know, name a dog breed. Somebody might say poodle, somebody might say cocker spaniel, somebody might say Yorkie, you know, whatever it is. That just shows you that everybody has a different breed, everybody thinks differently, so everybody can have a different higher power and it can all work. You know, there's lots of ways of climbing the mountain. But the dog god story I heard was just a little bit more powerful than that, and I'll try to tell it today. I always try to get it right, especially because this is being recorded, God help me. So dog help me. So, you know, I have a dog, and dog absolutely loves me. I feed the dog, I hang out with the dog, dog wants to hang around, nobody but me. I you know, wake up, dog's there, we hang out together, we do this, we do that, have a great time. I have to go to work. Look at the dog, I'm like, sorry, buddy, I gotta go, here's your food, here's this, here's your water, have a great time, I'll be home later. He just looks at me, you know, and I'm like, sorry, dude, you know, I gotta go, and I leave, and I go to work, and I go about my day doing my thing. And I come home from work, and first thing, elevator opens, the first thing I hear, dog's right there, freaking out, going crazy. You guys all know what I'm talking about, any dog owners. You know, the cats are just like, yeah, you're home, yay, whatever. Or I'll roll on my back, rub my belly, you know, whatever. In any case, it's true. I actually have both now. But so it's funny because the dog is right there, and it's like I get home, and it's like, oh my God, daddy's home, yay, and this and that, we're gonna hang out, and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna do that, and everything's great again, right? So now, I picture myself as the dog and the master as higher power. And I'm hanging out with higher power and things are right in my world. When I bring higher power in, you know, I can't compulsively overeat if higher power is in the picture. It's just impossibility, or I won't and I can't. I hate the word can't because it's really won't. But in a way, I can't. I'm unable to. If God is in my life, if I'm in fit spiritual condition, I can't. And then God has to go to work, and God goes out, and God does his thing, and I'm sad, and I'm alone, and then by the end of the day, God's right there. It works, right? I don't know what God's doing out there. I don't know the reason for it. I can come up with a billion things. I only got 45 minutes, so I'm going to move off this topic, because I want to talk about the rest of the steps. But, you know, the key is you get my point. And I don't know what the story is out there. I just know what I do and what I can do today for me. And that's not hurt myself with food because of anything that's outside of me and nothing that I can manage or control. Because it's not up to me. And so, you know, once the first and second step are down, then the work starts. You know what takes the big book? 87 pages to get to the third step? Not through the third step, but to the third step. When you include, I include the cover page, I include the table of contents. I'm one of those big book sponsors that takes you through every inch of it and centimeter and millimeter of it. I break down and I want to get my sponsors, I want to make a good sponsor. That's my goal when I sponsor somebody is, you know, I want to help other people as much as possible, but I want them to help people as much as possible. So my goal is like future stuff as well. So I break that down, and we go through the big book. And if you go through all that, the forwards, the doctor's opinion, you know, all the chapters, Bill's story, there's a solution more about alcoholism, we agnostics, how the beginning of how it works, all the way to page 60 or 87 pages, just to get you through steps 1 and 2. And then another 40 pages to get you through steps 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. So you have to think that 1 and 2 are kind of important. So it's a foundation, all right? It's a foundation. You know, we agnostics call step 2 the cornerstone. So, you know, it sets us up for that archway that we're building to walk through a free person. I was going to say a free man, but there's more women in here than men. Lots more women. So third step. There's only 2.5 pages of third step in the big book. And, you know, it's not that it's so diminished, because there's only 2 paragraphs of step 6 and 1 paragraph of step 7, so I'm not going to say any step is diminished. But the point is that it's a decision. We're making a decision. The third step does not tell me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It tells me to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I read every word. I take every word seriously. And the key for me is looking at that as that decision. I can make all the decisions I want. You know, and the old joke is, you know, the 3 birds sitting on a perch, and one of them makes a decision to jump. How many birds are left? Exactly. So that the bird, he made a decision. He didn't do nothing about it. So I mean, if I want to go to California, you know, I gotta first get a ticket. I gotta go to the airport. I have to get on the plane, then I have to go. So I have to do something about that decision. So the action of the third step is the fourth step. And you know, again, the text clearly tells me that on the bottom of page 63, top of 64, you know, it says we immediately launched into housekeeping. I'm just mincing, you know, sort of mixing words. But the key is that immediately the action of the third step is the fourth step, which is why How It Works is such a beautiful chapter, because it starts on step 2, brings us into step 3, then immediately starts giving us the work in step 4 and giving us that inventory. And that inventory is so important because I got to know what's making up. You ever in the big book, they talk about the fourth dimension of existence? Remember that in Bill's story on page 8? And There Is a Solution on page 25, you know, where the good stuff starts and There Is a Solution, because it's all a bunch of sad stuff. And There Is a Solution until page 25, and it all turns around and gives you all the good stuff. Well, it talks about the fourth dimension of existence. And Albert Einstein defined the fourth dimension of existence as now. I was like, wow, okay, well, how does Bill define it? And, you know, I have lots of big book mentors, and I'm a big fan of a couple of alcoholics who did recordings and did live big book studies, you know, every weekend, you know, about probably like 40, 45 weeks a year back in the 70s and 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And they talk about the fourth dimension of existence. And the first 3 dimensions is, the first dimension is, you know, they talk about we have a spiritual, emotional, and a physical disease. Well, the first 3 steps take care of that first dimension. The first 3 steps take care of the spiritual dimension and get us right with higher power. The next dimension is the emotional/mental dimension, and that's where 4, 5, 6, and 7 come in. Because 5, 6, and 7 all mention God, as I referenced before. So you need to have that spiritual connection set. So the first 3 steps take care of the spiritual dimension. The next 4, 5, 6, and 7 take care of the mental, emotional dimension. 8 and 9 take care of the physical dimension. And when they're talking about physical, they're not talking about the size of my ass. It's talking about the world around me and everything I touch. And that's where steps 8 and 9, me going out and making amends and cleaning up the wreckage of my life, I clear up so I can be all right with my, I could be all right with God, I could be all right with myself, and I can be all right with the world. And when I'm all right with God, when I'm all right with myself, and I'm all right with the world, I can be, I can live in the now, which is steps 10, 11, and 12. That's the fourth dimension. And so step four is so important, that inventory is so important. And the key to that inventory is I get to know me. And it's nothing more than, I'm not going to go into full detail and just go through a whole thing about the fourth step, because I know I don't have a lot of time. But the key to the inventory is just no more than me opening up my closet and going through an inventory. I have 7 pairs of pants, I have 2 suits, I have 15 shirts, I have 75 pairs of underwear, whatever the case is. I'm inventorying it. I'm not going into full detail and writing a life story on each one of these things. The fifth step is where I get the life story piece, because it talks about the exact nature of my wrongs. And you know when the fifth step starts in the big book on page 72, it talks about the exact nature of our defects. And it mixes the word wrongs, defects, and shortcomings throughout how it works and into action. And because it's the same stuff, and Bill took a creative writing course and he was basically told not to use the same word, you know, more than once or twice in a sentence. So that's why we have, you know, a lot of the words that we have. And the key is, what is a defect? You know, a defect is something that, when put into practice, brings me away from my higher power. What's an asset? Something that, when put into practice, brings me closer to my higher power. So the fifth step talks about admitting to God, to myself, and to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs, defects, shortcomings, whatever the case is. Because I deciphered that through cause and effect, through the inventory that I just made. And when I did that, I learned some incredible things about myself, learned some unsavory things about myself, but that's okay, I'm human. You know, I was also 500 pounds, it was pretty unsavory. So I had to learn these things, I had to get through it, sort of like a birth, you know, birthing, and getting through that birth canal and coming out a free man, sorry for the visual, you know, just being free. And the key is, you know, in step 5, it talks about admitting to God, to myself, and to another human being. So it's really saying these things out loud, giving them to my higher power. The other person and myself, we're just witnesses. You know, I lived this stuff, so I witnessed it. I forgot a lot of it. I tried to forget a lot of it with pounds and pounds and pounds of food. But sharing it with another person was the deal changer, because I brought another person into it. I opened up the floodlight on myself and all the stuff I've been hiding my whole life and I've been eating over. And it was unnecessary for me to compulsively overeat after that, because I got up close and personal with those character defects. On step 6, I did a bunch of different things to become entirely ready to have God remove these from me. And then I asked God to remove them in step 7. And I have some rituals and I have some things I do around 6 and 7, because the big book doesn't really give me much. But the key is, how am I on time? 5 minutes? We started late. Oh, come on, man. You're jipping me. I'll take the 6. So, you know, one of the fifth step promises, you know, there's promises for almost every single step in the big book except for 6 and 7. There's first step, second step, third step. There's promises. You know, the step 9 promises are the ones everybody talks about, and the step 10 promises are so important. But there's promises after every single step. Step 5 is actually really cool. Promises are on page, the 7 fifth step promises are on page 75. You can remember that one. I love, like, little trivia stuff. I stayed out of the trivia today. I didn't want to, like, you know. Anyway, but, you know, because I'm good at it and I just, it would be obnoxious. So the key is, one of the fifth step promises is to be alone at perfect peace and ease. How cool does that sound? For me, to be alone in this head, it's a scary place sometimes. You know, I learned, I'm a pretty big, strong guy, and I learned that the most dangerous part of my body is the 6 inches between my ears. And the more I could stay out of there and help you, because when I'm helping you, I'm out of my head. And when I get out of my head, God has a chance to come in and, you know, tool around and fix stuff so I can go back and continue my life without the need to compulsively overeat. So that's kind of what happens. So again, make my amends in steps 8 and 9, and then I get to live my life today. And I get to live steps 10, 11, and 12. And I want to talk about that for a few minutes, in my last few minutes. So I'm a believer in having sponsees, and I did this myself, working steps 10 and 11, pages 84 through 88 of the big book, starting right after the 9th step promises through the end of the chapter, working that from day one. Some people are like, why? That's blasphemous. You can't work steps 10 and 11 while doing step 2 or 3 or doing an inventory. And I'm like, well, step 10 is one paragraph of step 10, and then it gives a bunch of stuff, and then it gives some really cool promises. But it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the records of the past. I need a way to live now. While I'm doing my inventory work and cleaning up all the shit that got me here, I need a way to live now so I don't create more bad stuff. And I don't create more reasons to eat. Because how does a sponsee, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know, my question is, how does a sponsee get through their lives and get through an inventory and share that inventory without wanting to compulsively overeat? They need a way of living. So steps 10 and 11 offer that way. And it's clear-cut directions on page 84, and then on page 86, you know, 80, the bottom of 85, 86, 87, 88, it gives us clear-cut directions on what do I do before bed, what do I do when I wake, you know, daily inventories. I want to talk a little bit about the differences between steps 10 and 11. A lot of people, especially a lot of big book people, talk about the 11 step inventory, and we do our 11 step at the end of the day, and a lot of people in OA say 10 step, and then mix it up. I don't care what you say, just do it. But, you know, the key is that I don't remember, I can't even remember half the things. I've been up since 5:30 to come here today. I came here all the way from New York. I was on the Long Island Railroad at 6:53 in the morning to get here. I'm tired. You know, I was up half the night. Whatever. The point is I can't remember every little thing I did, and at the end of my day, how am I going to remember everything? So that's what the 10th step is for. It helps me get through my day. And it says, as these crop up, you know, not if they crop up, actually it says when these crop up, because it tells me it's going to crop up, my stuff, my selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It's those four character defects, those four buckets, I should say. Those four buckets, they sort of define all the world's character defects. They bring them down into four buckets to make it simple for us. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Every character defect in the world can be broken down into one of those four. And when these crop up, not if, but when, I have a way of dealing with it. You know, I basically do steps 4 through 9 on them. And on page 86, it gives me an inventory, because it tells me at night, before I go to sleep, I take a look at my day. Was I resentful? Was I angry? You know, do I owe an apology? Did I not share something that should have been shared? You know, all these different questions. And the reason for that is that I don't go to bed carrying this stuff, so I can awake tomorrow morning free. So if I do my 11-step inventory as connecting with God, I can wake up tomorrow morning a free person and not have to have the same resentment and fear and all this stuff that I was carrying from the day before. Hopefully if I did all my 10 steps right, most of those questions will be resentment, no, you know, angry, no, hurtful, no, fearful, no, because I carried it through my day and I 10-stepped everything away. And then step 12, you know, I was kind of sad when I was one of the three or four people who stood up as an available sponsor. And I'll give a caveat to that. I'm available, but I am in person. So I'm in New York. So if you're in New York and you work in New York or you want to hang or whatever, I'm available to sponsor. But so I'm not coming to Jersey, sorry. But in any case, just being real, being honest, I'm not a phone sponsor. You know, I'm not a Skype sponsor. I have worked with people from other countries, and I have worked with other people here and there, but I'm also a phone call away. I have cards with my phone number on it. I love to give them out, and so you guys have something, you know, use as a bookmark or whatever. But the thing is, what I learned is that service is so important, sponsoring is so important that, you know, again, I'm going to give another opinion, but if you've done the first 9 steps and you're living 10, 11, and 12 and you're abstinent for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days minimally, and you're not sponsoring, then you're stealing from the program. You're taking, but you're not giving. And it's a strong opinion, and not everybody agrees with me, and don't hate me, but I just believe it to be true. And I'm not a thief. I'm done. Okay. In closing, you know, God is way more important than my character, than my comfort. And I tell those in early abstinence, it's okay to be uncomfortable. I know you want to eat. If you live through that discomfort for a little while, it goes away. You know that whole, this too shall pass? It's true. It works. It really does. I got to tell you, I mean, I was 500 pounds. It was tough starting day one, and then day two, and then week one. It's tough for a person but it's also tough for a bulimic who's been vomiting every single day, multiple times a day, having to stop and not do that with all the gastro stuff that comes up. You know, I get that. But I realized that God is way more important, way more interested in my character than my comfort. And I'm willing to be a little uncomfortable today to walk the walk. And the last thing I'll say, it's an absolute privilege to be able to share this stuff with you today. I'm happy that you guys invited me, that the committee invited me. And I've lost the privilege of eating certain things and doing certain food behaviors, but I get the privilege of doing this, which is way better. It really is. It really is. So thank you, guys. I appreciate it.